I resigned from teaching and headed for Victoria. It was a big move. I managed to get jobs, some with the Education Department, TAFE, and the Department of Education, Employment and Training. Knackers moved just up the road from me. We saw a lot of each other, and it was good to have someone to talk to who understood. Come the 6th of August, we got together. Knackers was a bloody mess. His guilt about the date just appalled me. He went to pieces sobbing. My heart was hammering in my chest. Knackers was drunk and ranting that he had wished he'd been killed instead of the blokes who were. His grief turned into terrible anger, and I put him to bed, sat in the dark till dawn, then went home and got ready for work. The Welcome Home March through Sydney in 1987 was the catalyst for many reunions and renewed mateship. Our battalion, 7RAR, the Pig Battalion, had organised its first reunion at Holsworthy. It was fantastic. There were so many familiar faces, stories and memories. One highlight for me was seeing Jock for the first time since he disappeared into the body of a dust-off helicopter on August 6, 1967, after he'd been hit by a rocket. What a brave bugger. I remember at the time believing he would die. He hadn't, the tough bastard. And, as a result, he was our mascot, our hero. We drank too much and sang our hearts out. The opening of the Vietnam War Memorial was something I will never forget. It wasn't like our reunion. Instead, there were large numbers, large crowds, and a lot of pomp and ceremony. Everyone was talking and laughing, and then it happened. A very familiar noise, for some the most significant noise in our lives, rose above our heads. Thumper, thumper, thumper. Hueys, a group of them, lifting into the sky. They'd been our way out of the jungle, our lifeline, our fire support, our medical help. I remembered those brave, crazy men who flew them. I broke down. The sound penetrated so deeply into my soul, my spirit and my heart. Tears streamed down the cheeks of shaking, distraught men. Faces were locked skyward, staring as the choppers slowly moved overhead and then disappeared. The most powerfully symbolic moment in a day full of symbols that triggered the deepest emotions and memories of the men standing on the ground. To date, I could both hide and handle the August sweats, nightmares and severe mood swings, but people close to me didn't buy it. I loathed the stupidity of war for years. I would get angry and snap back at the radio or television news. I did this with repeated annoyance and frustration when I often saw leaders puff their chest and not hesitate to consider war as an option, even the only option. Yes, quite happy to kill masses of innocent people and claim God was on their side. What crap! If there was a God or a Buddha or a prophet or a Muhammad or any other eminent figure, surely compassion, a gentle hand, and a sincere belief in helping everyone sort out the problem were their ways. Around Anzac Day, a few vet mates marched. Knackers and I marched together. We awkwardly talked about the few vets who'd started to have breakdowns over the last 2 years. They'd ended up in the psychiatric ward. We couldn't think of anything more humiliating. I also attended the funeral of a bloke from my battalion, my intake, my age. It had been a suicide, and it wasn't the first. I met numerous vets in my area. Most were social misfits, only able to mix with other vets, and all of them struggled with holding down a job. But for all Knacker's openness and honesty, I really struggled to talk candidly. It was enough that he knew what I'd been through and understood what the life of a vet was like. If only the bloody thoughts and memories would go away. Surely, after nearly 30 years, they would start to fade or dissipate, or we could at least handle the memories. The advice that we should just get on with it or get over it was what greeted most veterans when we returned home, but now a lot of vets were getting sicker. I was tiring at work, I buried myself in projects without breaks and continually pushed myself, However, my chest pains were different this year. They had started in April, earlier, and mild at first, then slowly got stronger with no relief. The stomach problems increased and I had worsening wind pains. The doctor was at a loss. I was fit, very fit. I hadn't been a drinker for many years. I was a social smoker, one a week. I ate well. I was having 2 medical appointments a month, and the doctor felt that a psychiatrist might be my answer. As had happened before, he gave me 3 weeks off work, and again I went back the next day. By late May, I was becoming jumpy. Both my breath and bowels were giving me problems. I took a brave step. I dialed the psychiatrist's number. Looking back, I'm sure I never consciously bluffed the shrink. But I usually left the bi-monthly session convinced I had shown him I was a competent, capable and well-adjusted worker with no real problems. In fact, I was petrified I would break down, pour out my true feelings and blow my cover. Then where would I be? Mental friggin' ward, stuff that. Then, as if to finally break me, as August approached, for the first time I dreamed about an incident that had really happened in the jungle. It was something I had always tried to shut out if it tried to intrude in the form of a flashback. It had to do with the shooting of an old VC woman. I think she was badly wounded. She had walked into our position in the jungle. Bang. Shit. Then she was being carried to the Bell helicopter. The badly wounded woman would abuse me and spit out vile accusations that seemed to ring true. Her comments about my arrogance and prejudices were very accurate. Her every utterance was a damning condemnation of Australia's part in the war. Her argument had more logic than the political line trumpeted by our leaders. I would wake up swamped with depression and hopelessness, a hopelessness that could be only satisfied by my own death or suicide. I hadn't contemplated the latter, but there were times when I wondered what future there was for me. No matter how strong these signals were, I was obsessed with the notion that nothing would stop me from working. Stupidity, pride, guilt, and shame all worked together to make me gradually work myself into the ground rather than confront my own demons. In 1995, for once, August almost snuck up on me. Then suddenly, it was all-consuming. For months now, the emotions that surfaced during my nightmares had begun to intrude into my waking hours. At work, I was blurry-eyed and jumpy. I had chest pains. I couldn't sleep. An appointment was made with my GP. In his room, I told him, not the psychiatrist, that I was having severe sleeping problems and prolonged nightmares. He gently inquired further as to their cause. He was a kind man, genuinely interested in my well-being. He knew my wife and family very well. Then, without warning, I burst out with a deep, guttural roar. I screamed at him about the contact we'd had. I roared the vivid details of a wounded VC woman. I was on my feet ranting. We were so fucking heartless, I started to cry. It was a crude, wrenching, sobbing burst of agony. The doctor had tears in his eyes and again insisted, even pleaded, that I rest and take a month off work. And please tell the psych. I needed a mate, so I sought out Knackers. I badly needed his company, and I knew the feeling was mutual. On the night of the 6th of August, I drove out to his humpy, a camper bus. It was located in a paddock near a dam. He was having a can of beer, and I joined him. I'm rooted, mate. I just can't sleep. What are we going to do, Baz? I said nothing. I often asked that question of myself and had no answer. I was struggling to remain composed. Here we were, inarticulate and overwhelmed again. Knackers kept cursing himself for having gone to Bangkok on leave and for not being there when he was needed. I echoed him. I was distraught about my incompetence on the radio, my terror, my inability to cope and my failure. And both of us were faced with an added agony as it was generally accepted by now that the war in Vietnam had been wrong, stupid, a waste, and a pointless exercise. We were both rambling. The pain in my heart that night was all-consuming, bottomless, and overpowering. I felt hopeless, unable to help or accept help. At 4 a.m, I left Nackers in his bus and headed back home drunk. On the 14th of August, my wife answered the phone. Nackers was dead. I didn't believe her, but I did. Surely she had it wrong, but it must have been true. His heart was broken when I saw him last. Instead of going to work early, I sat in the lounge room staring at nothing. A chunk of my being, the thing that made me myself, had been ripped out. The pain was excruciating. I couldn't imagine life without him. Lynn was confused and scared. She didn't understand. But how could she? I'd never shared anything with her about Nackers or the significance of August the 6th. I never included her or any members of my family in my friendships with my army mates. She couldn't know that he'd been someone who shared a little of my grief and guilt and understood it. Poor Nackers. Poor Lynn. I woke up terrified. It was the same nightmare, a wailing, screaming VC, falling down, shot badly, accusing me of the filth that summed up my being. The scene was vivid, and it wouldn't go away. It was in the room. The room was the jungle. I was awake in a nightmare. I was back in Vietnam, awake. I seemed to have lost reality. My shoulders and chest ached from the heavy pack on my back. My muscles started to cramp and contract. I tried to throw off the radio. The weight started to crush my whole body. I could feel it slowing down my heart and it knocking hard against my chest. It was slowing. I was going. I couldn't get the weight off, but I remained quiet. This was my problem. Lynn was beside me, sleeping in the bed in the jungle. I was at the point of collapse, sinking, filled with the feeling that, all along, this had been meant to happen. Soon I would faint from the pain. That was okay, but it got too much. My pulse was very low. I woke Lynn. My heart is hurting bad. I'm going to be sick. She didn't panic. I staggered with her help to the bathroom, and the jungle started to disappear. Instead, I was in a warm, soft place that was bright, peaceful and beautiful, like the top of Connors Hill at the top of the Tambo Valley in East Gippsland. It was where I wanted to be, if only the pain in my chest would stop. Lynn tells me now she knew I was dying, but at the time she continued to talk to me and encourage me to come back, to stay with her, to breathe deep, and not to pass out. Her persistence was what saved me. I vividly recall making the conscious decision to focus on the pain and to fight to survive. Then I was on the couch in the lounge room with two MICA ambulance officers on either side. They were asking blunt questions with the utmost tact. Then the hospital ceiling was spinning as I was wheeled somewhere. I kept apologising to my poor wife. I heard the words, "His symptoms, major heart attack." They were wrong. I had to explain. "It's okay. My heart's okay," I ranted to those trying to help me. "It's not my heart. It's in my head. It's full of shit." Funnily enough, I was right. My heart was fine, broken maybe. It really was in my head.